I'm Teresa DeLongchamp Shadwell, and I'm 48. Today's date is May 8th, 2009, and we are at the Lincoln Center, New York, New York. And I am the biological mother to Matt Workman.
And I am Matt Workman, biological son. I am 32, I believe. Today is May 8th. We're at the Lincoln Center StoryCorps in New York, New York. All right. So where should we begin?
If you have a question for me, that would be great.
Well, how about we go way back before you were pregnant with me?
Okay.
What was your childhood like?
Oh.
That you can recall?
Well, I was born in Indiana, and had three older brothers. I have a sister that's 4 years younger than me. So we lived in Indiana, had a cornfield backyard that we would go back and play in. We moved to Michigan when I was six, and
to West Bloomfield.
Actually, it was Waterford area.
Okay.
And it was there when I lived in my grandma's house, a house that my dad grew up in, him and his grandpa. His father had built it.
Do you still have the house in the family?
No, when my grandmother passed away, it was sold.
Okay.
And so I lived there for a few years, and my parents divorced when I was 10, and that's when we moved to West Bloomfield, my mom and my three brothers and my sister. It was a pretty hard upbringing at that point because my dad pretty much left the family, and we didn't have a whole lot in the way of money, clothing, mm-hmm. things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we were a very close family, and we stayed there virtually. That's the last house we lived in.
Mm-hmm.
Grew up there. And I was always the kind of person that had a single friend, it seemed like, just a best friend, and would always hang tight with my best friend. And
did you enjoy school?
I was pretty insecure, so I didn't enjoy school a lot. I did okay, but my mom worked full-time, so I couldn't really get into any extracurricular things because I wouldn't have the transportation. So that was hard for me. But I was always a very competitive person, and I can recall in gym class I was able to excel and set some school records and things, say for hurdle jumping or 50-yard dash or whatever. Because I had the older brothers, I was very competitive. So I did well with that stuff.
And then age 15... You're in high school.
Age 15 in high school, yes.
You had been, I think you said you were dating
Tim was my boyfriend for probably a year and a half, maybe more. He was my brother Steve's best friend. And, when you're that young, you don't really understand the full impact of your actions and the consequences of what can occur. And, 6 months later when I discovered I was pregnant, there was a big decision to be made, and my mom was kind of embarrassed about the situation, her, being a single mom and her daughter getting pregnant. And so at that point, we talked, and I agreed that I would give the baby up for adoption. And with that agreement, then my mom found a place for me to live at Marillac Hall there in Southfield, and so I stayed there. And finished the remainder of the school year. They offered classes there in their basement. And I can remember taking, within that 3 months I was there, 2 or 3 years worth of typing classes, because I would just go in the basement at night and just type and type and type away. I also liked ceramics and sewing, and it was a very crafty place to be. I learned to crochet. I crocheted several Afghans.
That also was on the non-identifying information, too, by the way.
The Afghans, the crocheting, or
one of your hobbies is crocheting.
there were a lot of unwed mothers there. It was interesting. There was probably, when I was there, maybe 15 others. And we didn't only live there, we worked there. So we would work in the kitchen doing dishes, or we would be vacuuming the library, or, you know, so they, we kind of had to help help around there. And it wasn't a bad place to be.
Can you remember, if you're not comfortable, can you remember when you first approached your mom, or how that happened, when you realized that you might be pregnant?
Yeah, it's kind of a funny story. I didn't approach her at all. In our bathroom, when we were done showering, we were supposed to wipe down the wall. So I had the towel wrapped around me, and I was wiping down the wall, and the back of the towel fell off, and she saw stretch marks on my back, my lower back, and I was always a very thin person. So when she saw that, she sensed that something wasn't right. So she made an appointment with the doctor. You know, we talked, and she made an appointment with the doctor, and that's when it all, you know, all he had to do was listen to my stomach, because at that point I was 6 months long, and he could hear your heartbeat. So.
Wow.
So he,
my heartbeat.
Your heartbeat. Yes. Yeah, he was very mean to my mom and made her feel pretty humiliated about it.
The doctor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't the best, you know, situation. And right. He blamed her because she was a single mom and she didn't have time for us. And so.
Did you ever have conversations with your mom years later about any of it?
Very little. She was not a real open person and not easy to discuss things with. So immediately after I gave birth to you and decided to give you up for adoption, I told her, I don't want to give them up for adoption. I want to keep them. And I remember that conversation, and it didn't go very far, you know, at my young age, and her being the sole supporter of five children already, it wasn't an option. And she'd said, you know what, we made this arrangement ahead of time. You have got to stick with your you know, original plans. And I just, you know, I said, you're right. It's the agreement we made. And,
mm-hmm.
And as hard as it was, I understood that it was probably the best thing for everybody. I did talk to her years later about it, and, you know, my interest in finding you, and I knew I would have to wait till you were at least 18 before I could ever find you, and she was always concerned that you just don't know what that's going to bring into your life. You know, there could be bad things related to it. It's best just to leave things alone, and she was very unsupportive of me finding you. And I wish she was here today to see what a great person you are. And
thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
How was the labor?
Oh, boy. You know, it's funny. It was one of the weekends that I begged for her to let me come home. If I remember correctly, my due date was June 1st, and I went into labor, must have been the night of May 29th, and I stayed up all night long timing my contractions, and so when she woke up in the morning, I told her, you know, I think I'm in labor, you know, they're 2 minutes apart, they've been going on all night long, so snuck me into the back seat of the car and drove me into Providence Hospital in Southfield, and I probably labored another 12 hours, and it was painful, but pain fades with time, so you don't really recall how painful, but and another story about how naive I was with it when they actually had to break my water, so I was lying in bed, and of course, the sheets then got all wet, and they wanted to change the sheets, so they told me to stand up so they could change the sheets. So, you know, she turned around to get the fresh sheets, and I'm standing up in the middle of the bed thinking I wasn't supposed to get out of bed, but really she meant, you know, get up, stand up on the floor while I change the bed She turned around and sees me standing there in the middle of the bed and almost panicked, the nurse did, because, of course, afraid I would fall or whatever. Right. It must have been a funny scene. But, yeah, just part of being young and naive.
And then I was born at what time? What time of day?
You know, I'm thinking it was around 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah.
And you got to say goodbye to me? You got to hold me?
Well, not at that moment. They took you off to the nursery right away, and it was the next morning. The nurse came and asked me if I wanted to hold you. You know, because I'm sure they knew that I was giving you up for adoption. And I was grateful that they did that, because it was something else. I didn't realize what my rights were and if I would ever be able to. So, of course, I said yes, and they brought you to me, and they left, and I just, you know.
Were you by yourself, or was your mom there?
No, I was by myself, yeah. And just, you know, looking at your fingers and your face and trying to not get attached, because I knew I've always been a baby lover, so I knew it would be hard to hold you and get attached and then have to give you back. So.
And when did you come up with Anthony Lewis?
I must have come up with that when I was, you know, still expecting you. It was an easy decision because that was my favorite name, Anthony, and then Lewis seemed to fit, and it was my dad's middle name. And, of course, I wanted to give you the name DeLongchamp because Tim took no responsibility in his role. So I wasn't going to so easily give you his last name.
And Tim's family, and Tim is two doors down from you?
Two doors down, yes. Three doors at that time, but I moved one house over, which is where I currently live. His parents still live two doors down, yeah.
And it's still a little awkward, you said?
It is awkward when I see him. It's, of course, gotten better over the years because I've become a much more confident person. And
you see Tim once in a while when he's home?
You know, I don't recall the last time I saw him. It's been many years. I don't know if he even still lives in Michigan.
So skipping ahead a little bit to the present, what surprises you most about me now in the few short hours that we've...
You know, what surprised me most when I first saw you was the strong similarities, physical characteristics that you have of my other children, and how you and Alex look so much alike. You know, if I only was looking at your eyes, you'd be twins.
Is that right?
Yeah, and you've got, you know, the full lips and just a lot of different features and the height. Being 6'3", it's exactly how tall he is. So it's just your physical characteristics that surprised me. Also, your how far you've gone with your musical talent. And I haven't yet witnessed it, but just listening to what you've said that you do, and that's very impressive to me. You know, I've always loved to sing myself, but I've never been brave enough to actually sing by myself in front of anybody unless the radio's going. And I've had many people tell me I have a good singing voice, but it's just nothing that I've ever developed.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe if we have time at the end of this, we can sing a couple tunes.
Okay.
And for the record, I've seen photos of Alex, and he's a good-looking guy. So
so you agree you look alike.
So thank you, yes. How about mannerisms?
Yes, I was watching the way you were rubbing your chin last night and some of the things that you did, and just the way you move. I see similarities with you and Alex, definitely. Not so much with my daughters, but I think that's the difference between male and female, you know. Your voices are similar. You both got the deep voice.
questions off the top of your head now?
You're running out of questions. Nothing at the moment. You know, I hoped that our meeting would lead to, you know, future relationship and you meeting my children. Are you interested in meeting them?
I am. I'm very interested.
Good. Because I know they're interested in meeting you as well.
I think it would be a lot of fun. It would be, I can't think of anything else other than strange meeting them, really. When the first time you told me that you had children, it was, there was a deep, pleasant surprise and a huge curiosity about these half-siblings that I have. I grew up with an older brother, 5 years older. Not the closest relationship, but he is my brother nonetheless. We have great memories.
Mm-hmm.
But always had an interest in having siblings, especially sisters.
Yeah.
That would always be fun to have a sister.
To pick on a little bit, like you did last night with Tia.
to mentor and be there for you, yeah.
You know, another common characteristic that is so strong that I didn't mention is your sensitivity and your soft-spoken voice. You know, even being a man and having the deep voice, you speak softly, and that tends to be something that I see in myself, my kids.
Mm-hmm.
But the sensitivity, Alex, has always been a very, very caring and concerned of other people's feelings. And I sense that in you also. And a very gentle soul.
That's about right. What fears did you have, if any, before you initially called me?
You mean when I was given your phone number, when I finally got it?
Yeah.
I had absolutely no fear. It was like, finally. I finally got a way to contact him. It's like all these years had gone by, and what was it, like 30 years? There was no hesitation. I hung up with Bill and immediately dialed your number, and I was so happy when you answered, and I had no clue what I was going to say. I had nothing rehearsed, so it just was, Teresa, and I believe I'm your biological mom.
Do you remember the date?
No, I don't remember the date. Do you?
No. All I can remember is it was a Tuesday morning in November, and it was about 10 in the morning, and I was sitting at my desk, and my phone rang, and the caller ID came up all zeros.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never seen that before, and I usually don't answer the phone when I don't know who it is, but I was just so curious, so I picked it up, and I said hello, and this man with a deep voice said, "Is this Matt Workman?" I said, "Yes, may I ask who's calling?" And click, and he hung up.
That would have been a little scary.
And that was scary. my first thought was, who's looking for me? And my biological mom was the last person on my mind. And then 2 minutes later, another call came in. It was 248 area code. So immediately knew it was Michigan. And I assumed that whoever was calling at that time had to do with the person before.
Mm-hmm.
And I started thinking that it could be my biological mom or dad. More likely biological mom, and so I picked it up, and that's when you said, "Is this Matt? I think I'm your biological mom." And I looked at the phone and I said, "Is this your number that I can call you back? Can I give you a call back?
I need time to think about this," I believe is what you said.
Yep. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to go for a walk.
Were you afraid at that moment? Were you afraid of meeting me, or it just was such a rush? It rocked your world, so to speak. That's what Bill said. He must have really rocked his world.
Yeah. Well, initially I was nervous. And the more I thought about it, I became a little frustrated with the fact that you just called me, just you know, straightforward like that. And of course, I didn't realize how you went about getting my information, or that you were you didn't have my information, that you had to find it.
Mm-hmm.
I contacted Catholic Social Services and asked them if you had been in touch with them, and they told me the story. So, yeah, initially I was a little disappointed, but when you told me then at some point after that that you you know, your excitement and hoping that I wasn't disappointed that you waited so long, 30 years to contact me, then it all made sense, and I was a lot more comfortable with everything. And and you wrote me subsequent letters, one long one I remember when I was living in Forest Hills, where you handwritten letter,
mm-hmm.
Explaining the circumstances around your pregnancy and and your desire and interest in contacting me. So,
do you still have that letter?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the birthday card with the photos.
Yeah, I thought that would be interesting to send you your baby photo.
Yeah, how did you get that?
Well, I was I had the opportunity to buy firstborn photos when I was at the hospital after I gave birth. So
you had kept that with you?
Yes, I have a little scrapbook, and there's one or two pages with your information on it. And there was a lot of little and, you know, different size photos, so it's just made up of all the different photos. So I pulled one out of there to send you.
Yeah. And when was the first time that you told your children about me?
It was roughly the year 2000. Alex was
11
or 12. Yeah, they were pretty young, but I thought they were old enough to understand. And I just wanted them to hear it from me rather than hear it from somebody else and not get the right context of the
mm-hmm.
situation.
Mm-hmm.
So we were all sitting down looking through information, the three of us sitting on the sofa together, and something sparked the conversation, and I told them all about it. They were very curious and excited to think that they had a brother out there that they didn't know. And so I know they're consider you their brother. They've said that to me several times. And they're excited to meet you, and the rest of my family as well. My sister, my three brothers. I know that when you're ready to meet them, they would love to meet you. I've got a big family, and I think they all would embrace you. It probably would be something down the road when you're mm-hmm. ready.
That, I think I mentioned last night, that was one of the things that was preventing me from communicating much and often with you at first, was I knew there could be this great potential for a relationship and closeness and almost family-like, and I wasn't sure how I felt about that. And I talked to a lot of people, and it's interesting. to think about that potential. And
yeah, and you know, in no way is it replacing what you have, it's just adding to it. And I know that you've said you had a great upbringing and your parents are wonderful people, and you know, I give them my heartfelt thanks for doing such a wonderful job with you. And I certainly don't want to be a threat to them or to you, and just adding to what you've already got in your life, not replacing anything.
Yeah, thanks for saying that. And that was the biggest reason is I felt that I needed to have that conversation with my parents.
Mm-hmm.
Before we did meet, before I really felt it, before the need to have that conversation with them before we even
mm-hmm.
got into communicating very much, whether on the phone or an email. And they came and visited me one weekend here in New York, and I had a limited conversation with my dad. He expressed a little bit of disinterest,
mm-hmm.
Which is honestly I expected, because I knew growing up he was uncomfortable with that topic. And I always sensed growing up my mom was a little more understanding about it. She would, explain to my brother and I that, you know, them being the ones that raised us as if we are their children, and that there necessarily may not be a need to be in touch with our biological parents. And so that after that conversation with my dad, excuse me, I shied away from talking to my mom or mm-hmm. any further about it with my dad. So I do have an interest in having that conversation with my mom, though, at some point. At some point that'll come out, and I am optimistic about it.
Good. Did you feel like there was just a little something missing, not knowing or having met your biological parents?
Yes, but only after talking about it with people more and more.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that through these discussions with friends and about their relationship with their parents, that there is something to be said about blood relatives, and so it created this curiosity, and I did feel like there was something. Not necessarily something missing, but a potential for gaining quite a bit, and maybe even learning more about myself.
Mm-hmm. I remember you telling me that one of your most burning questions was what our nationality are.
Mm-hmm. I've always had an interest in family background.
Mm-hmm.
Genealogy.
You have, yeah. And it's something that you just had no clue of, obviously, so it would be very frustrating,
right,
with that interest. Mm-hmm. So you know now that Scots Irish, French Canadian is the strongest heritage that I could mention. I generally tell people it's more like a Heinz 57 mix, because mm-hmm. there's such a mix, but I believe those are the strongest.
Yeah. So whenever that question came up growing up, you know, what's your background? Where's your family from? I just, you know, I adopted my parents' genealogy
of
as
course.
If it was my own.
Mm-hmm. And was it similar at all to what
No, not really. My dad's side is from Eastern Europe, Croatia.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom's side is UK. So might be a little similarity there.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about your growing up. You know, that's something I've always been curious about, of course, because I missed out on all that, all those years. And
I was good in school. I was always great at math.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really like to read for some reason. I do now, but I was disruptive in class. I was a talker.
Were you like a comedian type?
I was, yeah.
Yeah.
Not necessarily for the attention, but I just was a Mr. Social.
I like to make people laugh.
Yep. And then in fifth grade, I, along with a few other select students, were invited to join this special academic program. It was called the PAT program, Program for Academically Talented Students. So that was a big honor. And that went into middle school. I was friends with just about everyone. I had one or two close friends growing up, and I don't stay in touch really with many people from my childhood. But I was involved in music. It started with the violin in elementary school, and then when I moved to the middle school, I took up the cello. And since I was such a talker and I had such a strict teacher, she asked me to maybe do something else. So that's when I started singing. And then the choir at the high school came and performed for us. I remember they sang in other languages, and it was very exciting, and that's what I wanted to do. And so I sang in high school and loved it, and my choir director in high school was like a mentor, like a big brother friend, and he recommended I go to Interlochen Arts Camp, so I did that for a few summers. And when I went to college at Western Michigan, I was interested in majoring in music, but I was kind of steered towards business, and I very much appreciated that decision. Studied finance, and then I was offered a graduate an assistantship. So they paid for my grad school, and that was an easy decision, so I stayed there and did that. But growing up, I was always wanting to do whatever my brother did,
mm-hmm.
Whether it was wrestling and then football. But I don't think my parents wanted me to play football, so I can't remember that exactly. But then he got into bike racing, and I loved that. We would go to Waterford Oaks bicycle track and race on Saturdays. That was a lot of fun. And then into high school, I wrestled. And I wasn't very good, wasn't the best, but I loved it, and then got involved in the musicals and started doing that, and so I've continued singing, and it's always been something I've enjoyed. I personally don't think I have that good of a soloist voice, but I enjoy it, so. What else can I tell you?
I see a lot of parallels with you and your experiences and experiences that I've had and my kids have had also with, you know, they all played the violin. My one daughter then played the viola and the cello. It all seemed to come very natural for them. Love to talk in class and try and make people laugh, especially Alex and Brianna. you had mentioned bowling every Saturday morning when you were growing up.
Right.
And we talked about that last night.
That was for several years, actually. I bowled.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I did growing up also. I mean, it sounds like a nothing thing, but as a kid, I absolutely loved it every Saturday morning.
So we may have been at Hartfield at the same time.
No, I was at a different bowling alley.
Oh.
Wonderland Lanes. Hartfield is something that Bill's been on a league there for years, but I knew that it was in your neighborhood as you grew up, so I wanted to mention that to you last night. Every time we would drive out there, I would think of you.
Yeah. I worked there.
You worked there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ed said something interesting last night. He said, excuse me, he always felt that I necessarily wouldn't be able to settle with, I think he was referring to a girlfriend or, you know, a future wife, until I had met you. He said he always felt that I needed to do that, that I was missing that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he saw in me.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, he may be right. It's hard for me to say. But at the same time, I wonder, because you were very reluctant to meet me in a protective way for your mom. So I don't know if this will help with that or not. But it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. Any last questions? Well, I would like to say that I've always been very appreciative that my biological mother gave me up for adoption. I was very lucky with great parents. I had a very good upbringing. And whenever I was asked growing up, and I've been asked hundreds of times, would you want to meet your biological parents or biological mom? And there was always a curiosity, but I've always thought to myself, well, I'd really like to, if I ever did meet her, I would thank her.
Oh, that's good to hear.
And that's what I would do.
That means a lot.
And just assure you that I've had a wonderful, wonderful life.
That means a lot. It brings it all full circle, you know, after. It's a very difficult thing to do, you know, give a baby up for adoption. So it's wonderful. Thank you for saying that.
And it's been I think this has been a fantastic first meeting and experience, and I do look forward to more.
Good, so do I.
In good time.
I think this is could be the beginning of a very good thing.
Yeah.
So I guess it happened for a reason that it took 30 years, because you're very mature and understanding and appreciate meeting me, and I certainly am very happy to finally see you again. And I'm very proud of what you've become.
Thanks. Well, I appreciate you doing this, having this conversation, and I'm sure we'll look back on it and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. I'm impressed that you wanted to preserve it. You know, it meant a lot.
Yeah.
And maybe your future children will listen to it one day.
Yeah. Absolutely. God willing. So, again, thank you.
Thank you.
Do you mind if I ask a few questions?
Not at all.
What didn't you expect when you met each other? You know, you talked about, you know, things you expected, but was there something about your mom that you didn't expect? And if that's too tough, tell me about what it was like last night, like what your first feelings when you saw her. And just tell me a little, or tell her a little bit about last night for you.
Last night went really well. The first meeting,
mm-hmm.
We had great conversation, and it was intermixed with just friendship and stories and good food and wine, and it was very casual. And to be honest with you, it's kind of what I expected. I was very optimistic,
mm-hmm.
and it was everything I had hoped for. And what I was a little surprised, what I didn't expect, was that. I don't know how a better way to say this. I didn't expect to not be emotional. So happy that it's almost a sadness. You know, I wasn't overcome with emotion, and I actually expected to, but don't take that the wrong way. I was very happy, and it was. I think I said a few times it was just strange. I needed to absorb everything.
And I'm generally a very emotional person, too, and Bill just knew for sure that I would be crying last night. But it was just such a comfortable atmosphere, and the conversation just started immediately, that there was really no opportunity for tears and emotion. It was, I think, just more happiness and curiosity and tell me more. And it was I sensed that we knew each other already, and it was a very easy evening.
Yeah, I think the conversations we've had leading up, and the exchange of photos that was a nice mm-hmm. ramp up to our first meeting. It was.
Yeah, so for 2 years we have been emailing and talking on the phone, and that's been a good icebreaker, I think, that made the meeting go much easier.
Yeah. Anything that you didn't expect?
No, I mean, you looked exactly like, you know, the pictures. You just did the big smile, the hug. I just, I didn't expect the questions and conversation would move as rapidly as it did, but it was very comfortable, and
yeah.
I thought we would just kind of be at a loss for words at first and be uncomfortable asking questions, but it just came out, and it was no problem, no uncomfortableness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember what your first question was?
Hmm.
No, because everything, I can't remember what my first question was. Everything came out naturally.
Yeah, I don't remember the first either. It was just a casual greeting, and
I think Ed helped move things along.
Who is Ed? Can you clarify that?
Ed is a very close friend of mine, and his dad is close friends with my dad, and his grandfather knew my grandfather, so Ed's like family. Up to the point that we first made contact, Ed was the one that I would confide in and talk to and help try and make sense of a lot of this, what I was feeling, and so Ed really was a big help for me.
And he hosted the meeting last night in his home, and I had my husband and I over, so we were just meeting Ed for the first time last night, of course. And
your husband is Bill.
Bill. Mm-hmm.
How? Tell me about finding Matthew, or actually tell Matthew about. And how did you decide, and then what actually?
You know, for years I was interested in finding Matt. He was always Anthony to me, because he was named Anthony. I found an adoption search agency that I was paying yearly dues to in an effort to find Matt. And they never came up with any information. So when I just kind of gave up on that, and I just felt like I had no rights to finding him. I thought that it was the adopted child that would make the decision to find the parent. And I was one day driving to school, and it was a detour, and it took me past Catholic Social Services. So I was sitting there at the light and looking at the building, and I decided I need to call them. And I picked up my phone and called them right at that moment, and was able to get through to a social worker there who eventually called Matt's house, where he grew up, and spoke with Matt's mother. And apparently your mom was not, thought that you were no longer interested in finding me.
Yep, and she spoke on my behalf. So that kind of told me indirectly how she felt, but I think it doesn't, that shouldn't necessarily represent how she feels. So then when I spoke to Catholic Social Services, she first of all was very excited for both of us.
The social worker was?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And she explained to me that they only had my college information and or my home information. So she did make an effort to contact me and reach out. They couldn't find me.
And when she told me that you had signed a waiver when you were 18, I was devastated and heartbroken that I had not reached out and thought how horrible it must have been you for now, what, 12 years, never heard anything from me after you signing that waiver. And so I figured that there had been pain of not knowing and not hearing anything, and that's why your mom said that you weren't interested, because she didn't want any more future anguish for you.
And as I told you last night, I'm proud to say that that's not the case. I had never had any negative feelings ever toward you towards the whole situation of my biological mom not reaching out to me.
And that was a huge relief to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this has been turned out to be a great trip to New York.
Your first.
Yes.
Your first.
First of a few things, huh? Yeah. And I'm happy that we did it.
And next time we'll have to bring Alex, Brianna, and Tia.
Yes. They would love to. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm Teresa DeLongchamp Shadwell, and I'm 48. Today's date is May 8th, 2009, and we are at the Lincoln Center, New York, New York. And I am the biological mother to Matt Workman.
And I am Matt Workman, biological son. I am 32, I believe. Today is May 8th. We are at the Lincoln Center StoryCorps in New York, New York. All right. So where should we begin?
If you have a question for me, that would be great.
Well, how about we go way back before you were pregnant with me?
Okay.
What was your childhood like?
Oh.
That you can recall?
Well, I was born in Indiana, and had three older brothers. I have a sister that's 4 years younger than me, so we lived in Indiana. Had a like a cornfield backyard that we would go back and play in. We moved to Michigan when I was six, and
to West Bloomfield.
Actually, it was Waterford area.
Okay.
And it was there when I lived in my grandma's house, a house that my dad grew up in, him and his grandpa. His father had built it.
Do you still have the house in the family?
No, when my grandmother passed away, it was sold.
Okay.
And so I lived there for a few years, and my parents divorced when I was 10, and that's when we moved to West Bloomfield, my mom and my three brothers and my sister. It was a pretty hard upbringing at that point, because my dad pretty much left the family, and we didn't have a whole lot in the way of money, clothing, mm-hmm. things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we were a very close family, and we stayed there virtually. That's the last house we lived in.
Mm-hmm.
Grew up there. And I was always the kind of person that had a single friend. It seemed like just a best friend, and would always hang tight with my best friend. And
did you enjoy school?
I was pretty insecure, so I didn't enjoy school a lot. I did okay, but My mom worked full-time, so I couldn't really get into any extracurricular things because I wouldn't have the transportation. So that was hard for me. But I was always a very competitive person, and like I can recall in gym class, I was able to excel and set some school records and things, say for hurdle jumping or 50-yard dash or whatever. And because I had the older brothers, I was very competitive. So I did well with that stuff.
And then age 15, you're in high school.
Age 15 in high school, yes.
You had been, I think you said you were dating
Tim was my boyfriend for probably a year and a half, maybe more. He was my brother Steve's best friend. And, when you're that young, you don't really understand the full impact of your actions and the consequences of what can occur. And, so 6 months later, when I discovered I was pregnant, there was a big decision to be made, and my mom was kind of embarrassed about the situation, her, you know, being a single mom and her daughter getting pregnant. And so at that point, we talked, and I agreed that I would give the baby up for adoption. And with that agreement, then my mom found a place for me to live at Marillac Hall there in Southfield, and so I stayed there. And finished the remainder of the school year. They offered classes there in their basement. And I can remember taking, like, within that 3 months I was there, 2 or 3 years worth of typing classes, because I would just go in the basement at night and just type and type and type away. I also like ceramics and sewing, and it was a very crafty place to be. I learned to crochet. I crocheted several Afghans.
That also was on the non-identifying information, too, by the way.
The Afghans, the crocheting, or
one of your hobbies is crocheting.
there were a lot of unwed mothers there. It was interesting. There was probably, when I was there, maybe 15 others, and we didn't only live there; we worked there. So we would work in the kitchen doing dishes, or we would be vacuuming the library, or we kind of had to help. Help around there. And it wasn't a bad place to be.
Can you remember, if you're not comfortable, can you remember when you first approached your mom or how that happened when you realized that you might be pregnant?
Yeah, it's kind of a funny story. I didn't approach her at all. In our bathroom, when we were done showering, we were supposed to wipe down the wall. So I had the towel wrapped around me and I was wiping down the wall, and the back of the towel fell off, and she saw stretch marks on my back, my lower back, and I was always a very thin person. So when she saw that, she sensed that something wasn't right. So she made an appointment with the doctor. You know, we talked, and she made an appointment with the doctor, and that's when it all, you know, all he had to do was listen to my stomach, because at that point I was 6 months long, and he could hear your heartbeat, so...
Oh.
So he,
my heartbeat.
Your heartbeat. Yes. Yeah, it was he was very mean to my mom and made her feel pretty humiliated about it.
The doctor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't the best, situation. And right. He blamed her because she was a single mom and she didn't have time for us. And so.
Did you ever have conversations with your mom years later about any of it?
Very little. She was not a real open person and not easy to discuss things with. So immediately after I gave birth to you and decided to give you up for adoption, I told her, I don't want to give him up for adoption. I want to keep him. And I remember that conversation, and it didn't go very far. at my young age, and her being the sole supporter of 5 children already, it wasn't an option. And she'd said, we made this arrangement ahead of time. You have got to stick with your original plans. And I just, I said, you're right. That's the agreement we made. And
mm-hmm.
And as hard as it was, I understood that it was probably the best thing for everybody. I did talk to her years later about it and, you know, my interest in finding you. And I knew I would have to wait till you were at least 18 before I could ever find you. And she was always concerned that you just don't know what that's going to bring into your life. You know, it's there could be bad things related to it. It's best just to leave things alone. And she was very unsupportive of me finding you. And I wish she was here today to see what a great person you are.
Thanks. Yeah,
you're welcome.
How was the labor?
Oh, boy. You know, it's funny. It was one of the weekends that I begged for her to let me come home. If I remember correctly, my due date was June 1st, and I went into labor, must have been the night of May 29th, and I stayed up all night long timing my contractions, and so when she woke up in the morning, I told her, you know, I think I'm in labor, you know, they're 2 minutes apart, they've been going on all night long, so snuck me into the back seat of the car and drove me into Providence Hospital in Southfield, and I probably labored another, I'm guessing maybe another 12 hours, and it was painful, but it pain fades with time, so you don't really recall how painful, but and another story about how naive I was with it when they actually had to break my water, so I was lying in bed, and of course, the sheets then got all wet, and they wanted to change the sheets, so they told me to stand up so they could change the sheets. So, you know, she turned around to get the fresh sheets, and I'm standing up in the middle of the bed thinking I wasn't supposed to get out of bed, but really she meant, you know, get up, stand up on the floor while I changed the bed. She turned around and sees me standing there in the middle of the bed and almost panicked, the nurse did, because, of course, afraid I would fall or whatever. Right. It must have been a funny scene, but... yeah, just part of being young and naive,
and then I was born at what time? What time of day?
You know, I'm thinking it was around 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah.
And you got to say goodbye to me. You got to hold me.
Well, not at that moment. They took you off to the nursery right away, and it was the next morning. The nurse came and asked me if I wanted to hold you, you know, because I'm sure they knew that I was giving you up for adoption, and I was grateful that they did that, because it was something else. I didn't realize what my rights were and if I would ever be able to, so of course I said yes, and they brought you to me, and they left, and I just, you know.
Were you by yourself, or was your mom there?
No, I was by myself, yeah, and just, you know, looking at your fingers and your face, and trying to not get attached, because I knew I've always been a baby lover, so I knew it would be hard to hold you and get attached and then have to give you back. So.
And when did you come up with Anthony Lewis?
I must have come up with that when I was, you know, still expecting you. It was an easy decision because that was my favorite name, Anthony, and then Lewis seemed to fit, and it was my dad's middle name. And, of course, I wanted to give you the name DeLongchamp because Tim took no responsibility in his role. So I wasn't going to just so easily give you his last name.
And Tim's family, and Tim is 2 doors down from you?
2 doors down, yes. 3 doors at that time, but I moved 1 house over, which is where I currently live. His parents still live 2 doors down, yeah.
And it's still awkward, you said?
It is awkward when I see him. It's, of course, gotten better over the years because I've become a much more confident person. And
you see Tim once in a while when he's home?
You know, I don't recall the last time I saw him. It's been many years. I don't know if he even still lives in Michigan.
So skipping ahead a little bit to the present.
Mm-hmm.
What surprises you most about me now in the few short hours that we've...
You know, what surprised me most when I first saw you was the strong similarities, physical characteristics that you have of my other children, and how you and Alex look so much alike. You know, if I only was looking at your eyes, you'd be twins.
Is that right?
Yeah, and you've got, you know, the full lips and just a lot of different features and the height. Being 6'3", it's exactly how tall he is. So it's just your physical characteristics that surprised me. Also, your how far you've gone with your musical talent. And I haven't yet witnessed it, but just listening to what you've said that you do, and that's very impressive to me. You know, I've always loved to sing myself, but I've never been brave enough to actually sing by myself in front of anybody unless the radio's going. And I've had many people tell me I have a good singing voice, but it's just nothing that I've ever developed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe if we have time at the end of this, we can sing a couple tunes.
Okay.
And for the record, I've seen photos of Alex, and he's a good-looking guy, so...
So you agree you look alike.
So thank you, yes. How about mannerisms?
Yes, I was watching the way you were rubbing your chin last night and some of the things that you did, and just the way you move. I see similarities with you and Alex,
mm-hmm.
definitely. Not so much with my daughters, but I think that's the difference between male and female, you know. Your voices are similar. You both got the deep voice.
Any questions off the top of your head now?
You're running out of questions. Nothing at the moment. You know, I hoped that our meeting would lead to, you know, future relationship and you meeting my children. Are you interested in meeting them?
I am. I'm very interested.
Good.
I know
they're interested in meeting you as well.
I think it would be a lot of fun. It would be, I can't think of anything else other than strange meeting them, really. When the first time you told me that you had children, it was, there was a deep, pleasant surprise and huge curiosity about these half-siblings that I have. I grew up with an older brother, 5 years older. Not the closest relationship, but he is my brother nonetheless. We have great memories.
Mm-hmm.
But always had an interest in having siblings, especially sisters.
Yeah.
Thought it'd always be fun to have a sister. Yeah.
To pick on a little bit, like you did last night with Tia.
to mentor and be there for, yeah.
You know, another common characteristic that is so strong that I didn't mention is your sensitivity and your soft-spoken voice. You know, even being a man and having the deep voice, you speak softly, and that tends to be something that I see in myself, my kids.
Mm-hmm.
But the sensitivity, Alex, has always been a very, very caring and concerned of other people's feelings, and I sense that in you also, and very gentle soul.
That's about right. What fears did you have, if any, before you initially called me?
You mean when I was given your phone number, when I finally got it?
Yeah.
I had absolutely no fear. It was like, finally. I finally got a way to contact him. It's like all these years had gone by, and what was it, like 30 years? There was no hesitation. I hung up with Bill and immediately dialed your number, and I was so happy when you answered, and I had no clue what I was going to say. I had nothing rehearsed, so it just was, I'm Teresa, and I believe I'm your biological mom.
Do you remember the date?
No, I don't remember the date. Do you?
No. All I can remember is it was a Tuesday morning in November, and it was about 10 in the morning, and I was sitting at my desk, and my phone rang. The caller ID came up all zeros, and I had never seen that before, and I usually don't answer the phone when I don't know who it is, but I was just so curious, so I picked it up, and I said hello, and this man with a deep voice said, "Is this Matt Workman?" I said, "Yes, may I ask who's calling?" And click, and he hung up.
That would have been a little scary.
And that was scary. Yeah, my first thought was, who's looking for me? And my biological mom was the last person on my mind. And then 2 minutes later, another call came in. It was 248 area code. So immediately knew it was Michigan. And I assumed that whoever was calling at that time had to do with the person before. And I actually... Then I started thinking that it could be my biological mom or dad. More likely biological mom. And so I picked it up, and that's when you said, "Is this Matt? I think I'm your biological mom." And I looked at the phone and I said, "Is this your number that I can call you back in?" Can I give you a call back?
I need time to think about this, I believe is what you said.
Yep. Thank you. And I had to go for a walk.
Were you afraid at that moment? Were you afraid of meeting me, or it just was such a rush? It rocked your world, so to speak. That's what Bill said. It must have really rocked his world.
Yeah. Well, initially I was nervous. And the more I thought about it, I became a little frustrated with the fact that you just called me, just straightforward like that. And of course, I didn't realize how you went about getting my information, or that you were you didn't have my information, that you had to find it. I contacted Catholic Social Services and asked them if you had been in touch with them, and they told me the story. So, initially I was a little disappointed, but when you told me then at some point after that that you your excitement and hoping that I wasn't disappointed that you waited so long. 30 years to contact me, then it all made sense, and I was a lot more comfortable with everything, and you wrote me subsequent letters, one long one I remember when I was living in Forest Hills, where you handwritten letter, explaining the circumstances around your pregnancy and your desire and interest in contacting me. So,
do you still have that letter?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the birthday card with the photos.
Yeah, I thought that would be interesting to send you your baby photo.
Yeah. How did you get that?
Well, I was I had the opportunity to buy firstborn photos when I was at the hospital after I gave birth. So
you had kept that with you?
Yes, I have a little scrapbook, and there's one or two pages with your information on it. And there was a lot of little and different size photos, so it's just made up of all the different photos. So I pulled one out of there to send you. Yeah.
And when was the first time that you told your children about me?
It was roughly the year 2000. Alex was
Alex was 11 or 12.
Yeah, they were pretty young, but I thought they were old enough to understand. And I just wanted them to hear it from me rather than hear it from somebody else and not get the right context of the mm-hmm. situation.
Mm-hmm.
So we were all sitting down looking through information, the three of us sitting on the sofa together, and something sparked the conversation, and I told them all about it. They were very curious and excited to think that they had a brother out there that they didn't know. And so I know they're consider you their brother. They've said that to me several times, and are excited to meet you. And the rest of my family as well. My sister, my three brothers. I know that when you're ready to meet them, they would love to meet you. I've got a big family, and I think they all would embrace you. It probably would be something down the road when you're mm-hmm. ready.
That, I think I mentioned last night, that was one of the things that was preventing me from communicating much and often with you at first, was I knew there could be this great potential for a relationship and closeness and almost family-like, and I wasn't sure how I felt about that. And I talked to a lot of people, and it's interesting to think about that potential. And
yeah, and you know, in no way is it replacing what you have, it's just adding to it. And and I know that you've said you had a great upbringing and your parents are wonderful people, and you know, I give them my heartfelt thanks for doing such a wonderful job with you. And I certainly don't want to be a threat to them or to you, and just adding to what you've already got in your life, not replacing anything.
Yeah, thanks for saying that. And that was the biggest reason, is I felt that I needed to have that conversation with my parents
mm-hmm.
Before we did meet. Before I really felt it before the need to have that conversation with them before we even
mm-hmm.
got into communicating very much, whether on the phone or an email. And they came and visited me one weekend here in New York, and I had a limited conversation with my dad. He expressed a little bit of disinterest,
mm-hmm.
Which is honestly I expected, because I knew growing up he was uncomfortable with that topic. And I always sensed growing up my mom was a little more understanding about it. She would explain to my brother and I that, you know, them being the ones that raised us as if we are their children, and that there necessarily may not be a need to be in touch with our biological parents. And so that after that conversation with my dad, excuse me, I shied away from talking to my mom or mm-hmm. any further about it with my dad. So I do have an interest in having that conversation with my mom, though, at some point. At some point that'll come out, and I am optimistic about it.
Good. Did you feel like there was just a little something missing, not knowing or having met your biological parents?
Yes, but only only after talking about it with people more and more.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that through these discussions with friends and about their relationship with their parents, that there is something to be said about blood relatives, and so it you know it created this curiosity and I did feel like there was something. Not necessarily something missing, but a potential for gaining quite a bit, and maybe even learning more about myself.
Mm-hmm. I remember you telling me that one of your most burning questions was what our nationality, our.
Mm-hmm. I've always had an interest in family background.
Mm-hmm.
Genealogy.
You have, yeah. And it's something that you just had no clue of, obviously, so it would be very frustrating.
Right.
with that interest. Mm-hmm. So you know now that Scots Irish, French Canadian is the strongest heritage that I could mention. I generally tell people it's more like a Heinz 57 mix because mm-hmm. there's such a mix, but I believe those are the strongest.
Yeah. So whenever that question came up growing up, you know, what's your background? Where are you? Where's your family from? I just, you know, I adopted my parents' genealogy as if it was my own.
Mm-hmm. And was it similar at all to what?
No, not really. My dad's side is from Eastern Europe, Croatia.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom's side is UK. So might be a little similarity there.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about your growing up. You know, that's something I've always been curious about, of course, because I missed out on all that, all those years. And
I was good in school. I was always great at math.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really like to read for some reason. I do now, but I was disruptive in class. I was a talker.
Were you like a comedian type?
I was, yeah.
Yeah.
Not necessarily for the attention, but I just was a Mr. Social.
You like to make people laugh?
Yep. And then in fifth grade, I, along with a few other select students, were invited to join this special academic program. It was called the PAT program, Program for Academically Talented Students. So that was a big honor, and that went into middle school. I was friends with just about everyone. I had one or two close friends growing up, and I don't stay in touch really with many people from my childhood, but I was involved in music. It started with the violin in elementary school, and then when I moved to the middle school, I took up the cello. And since I was such a talker and I had such a strict teacher, she asked me to maybe do something else. So that's when I started singing. And then the choir at the high school came and performed for us. I remember they sang in other languages, and it was very exciting. And that's what I wanted to do. And so I sang in high school and loved it. And my choir director in high school was like a mentor, like a big brother friend. And he recommended I go to Interlochen Arts Camp, so I did that for a few summers. When I went to college at Western Michigan, I was interested in majoring in music, but I was kind of steered towards business, and I very much appreciated that decision. Studied finance, and then I was offered a graduate, an assistantship. So they paid for my grad school, and that was an easy decision. So I stayed there and did that. But growing up, I was always wanting to do whatever my brother did, whether it was wrestling and then football. But I don't think my parents wanted me to play football, so I can't remember that exactly. But then he got into bike racing, and I loved that. We would go to Waterford Oaks bicycle track and race on Saturdays. That was a lot of fun. And then into high school, I wrestled. And I wasn't very good, wasn't the best, but I loved it, and then got involved in the musicals and started doing that, and so I've continued singing, and it's always been something I've enjoyed. I personally don't think I have that good of a soloist voice, but I enjoy it, so. What else can I tell you?
I see a lot of parallels with you and your experiences, and experiences that I've had and my kids have had also with, you know, they all played the violin. My one daughter then played the viola and the cello. It all seemed to come very natural for them. Love to talk in class and try and make people laugh, especially Alex and Brianna. You had mentioned bowling every Saturday morning when you were growing up,
right.
And we talked about that last night.
That was for several years, actually. I bowled.
And that's what I did growing up also. I mean, it sounds like a nothing thing, but as a kid I absolutely loved it every Saturday morning.
So we may have been at Hartfield at the same time.
No, I was at a different bowling alley.
Oh.
Wonderland Lanes. Now, Hartfield is something that Bill's been on a league there for years, but I knew that it was in your neighborhood as you grew up, so I wanted to mention that to you last night.
Cause
every time we would drive out there, I would think of you.
Yeah. I worked there.
You worked there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ed said something interesting last night. He said, excuse me, he always felt that I necessarily wouldn't be able to settle with, I think he was referring to a girlfriend or, you know, a future wife, until I had met you. He said he always felt that I needed to do that, that I was missing that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he saw in me.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, he may be right. It's hard for me to say. But at the same time, I wonder, because you were very reluctant to meet me in a protective way for your mom. So I don't know if this will help with that or not. But it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. Any last questions? Well, I would like to say that I've always been very appreciative that my biological mother gave me up for adoption. I was very lucky with great parents. I had a very good upbringing. And whenever I was asked growing up, and I've been asked hundreds of times, would you want to meet your biological parents or biological mom? And there was always a curiosity, but I've always thought to myself, well, I'd really like to, if I ever did meet her, I would thank her.
Oh, that's good to hear.
And that's what I would do. And,
that means a lot.
And just assure you that I've had a wonderful, wonderful life.
That means a lot. It brings it all full circle, you know, after... it's a very difficult thing to do, you know, give a baby up for adoption, so... It's wonderful. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah. And it's been a... I think this has been a fantastic first meeting and experience, and I do look forward to more.
Good. So do I.
And good time.
I think this is... could be the beginning of a very good thing.
Yeah.
So I guess it happened for a reason that it took 30 years, because you're very mature and understanding and appreciate meeting me, and I certainly am very happy to finally see you again. And I'm very proud of what you've become.
Thanks. Well, I appreciate you doing this. Having this conversation, and I'm sure we'll look back on it and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. I'm impressed that you wanted to preserve it. You know, it meant a lot.
Yeah.
And maybe your future children will listen to it one day.
Yeah. Absolutely. God willing. So, again, thank you.
Thank you.
Do you mind if I ask a few questions?
Not at all.
What didn't you expect when you met each other? You know, you talked about, you know, things you expected, but was there something about your mom that you didn't expect at all when you talked to her? And if that's too tough, tell me about what it was like last night, like what your first feelings when you saw her. Just tell me a little, or tell her a little bit about last night for you.
Last night went really well. The first meeting, mm-hmm. We had great conversation, and it was intermixed with just friendship and stories and good food and wine, and it was very casual. And to be honest with you, it's kind of what I expected. I was very optimistic,
mm-hmm.
and it was everything I had hoped for, and what I was a little surprised, what I didn't expect, was that, I don't know how, a better way to say this, I didn't expect to not be emotional. So happy that it's almost a sadness. You know, I wasn't overcome with emotion, and I actually expected to, but don't take that the wrong way. I was very happy, and it was, I think I said a few times, it was just strange. I needed to absorb everything.
And I'm generally a very emotional person too, and Bill just knew for sure that I would be crying last night. But it was just such a comfortable atmosphere, and the conversation just started immediately, that there was really no opportunity for tears and emotion. It was, I think, just more happiness and curiosity and tell me more. And it was, I sensed that we knew each other already, and
absolutely.
It was a very easy evening.
Yeah, I think the conversations we've had leading up, and the exchange of photos, that was a nice mm-hmm. ramp up to our first meeting. It was,
yeah. So for 2 years we have been emailing and talking on the phone, and that's been a good icebreaker, I think, that made the meeting go much easier.
Yeah. Anything that you didn't expect?
No, I mean, you looked exactly like, you know, the pictures. You just did the big smile, the hug. I just, I didn't expect the questions and conversation would move as rapidly as it did, but it was very comfortable, and I thought we would just kind of be at a loss for words at first and be uncomfortable asking questions, but it just came out, and it was no problem, no uncomfortableness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember what your first question was?
Hmm.
No, because everything, I can't remember what my first question was. Everything came out naturally.
Yeah, I don't remember the first either. It was...
You know,
just a casual greeting, and
I think Ed helped move things along.
And who is Ed? Can you just clarify that?
Ed is a very close friend of mine, and his dad is close friends with my dad, and his grandfather knew my grandfather, so Ed's like family, and he, up to the point that we first made contact, Ed was the one that I would confide in and talk to and help try and make sense of a lot of this, what I was feeling, and so Ed really was a big help for me.
And he hosted the meeting last night in his home, and I had my husband and I over. So we were just meeting Ed for the first time last night, of course. And
your husband is Bill?
Bill, mm-hmm.
Tell me about finding Matthew, or actually tell Matthew about finding him. How did you decide, and then what actually?
You know, for years I was interested in finding Matt. He was always Anthony to me, because he was named Anthony. I found an adoption search agency that I was paying yearly dues to in an effort to find Matt. And they never came up with any information. So when I just kind of gave up on that, and I just felt like I had no rights to finding him. I thought that it was the adopted child that would make the decision to find the parent. And I was one day driving to school, and it was a detour, and it took me past Catholic Social Services. So I was sitting there at the light and looking at the building, and I decided I need to call them. And I picked up my phone and called them right at that moment and was able to get through to a social worker there who eventually called Matt's house, where he grew up, and spoke with Matt's mother. And apparently, yeah. Your mom thought that you were no longer interested in finding me.
Yep, and she spoke on my behalf. So that kind of told me indirectly how she felt. But I think that shouldn't necessarily represent how she feels. So then, when I spoke to Catholic Social Services, she, first of all, was very excited for both of us.
The social worker was?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And she explained to me that they only had my college information and or my home information. So she did make an effort to contact me and reach out. They couldn't find me.
And when she told me that you had signed a waiver when you were 18, I was devastated and heartbroken that I had not reached out and thought how horrible it must have been you for now, 12 years, never heard anything from me. Yeah, after you signing that waiver. And so I figured that there had been pain of not knowing and not hearing anything, and that's why your mom said that you weren't interested, because she didn't want any more future anguish for you.
And as I told you last night, I'm proud to say that that's not the case. I had never had any negative feelings ever toward you towards the whole situation of my biological mom not
and that was a huge relief to hear.
Yeah.
So this has been turned out to be a great trip to New York.
Your first.
Yes.
Your first.
First of a few things, huh? Yeah. And I'm happy that we did it.
And next time we'll have to bring Alex, Brianna, and Tia.
Yes. They would love to. Thank you very much.
Thank you.